Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Creepy clown sightings have been reported in at least 10 different states since September. You've heard the reports, maybe you've smiled at the notion, or maybe the specter of a creepy clown sighting has sent a ripple of dread down your spine. 10 TV News reported on the trend last month.
Mansfield, Galleon, Lancaster, Newark, Marion, and Guernsey County have all had reports of people seeing people dressed as clowns.
And Tracy, a school district near Cincinnati closed for the day after a woman says she was attacked by a man dressed as a clown. She also said he made threats against students. Reading Community City Schools decided to close because many students walked to school and the suspect hasn't been caught yet.
Some suspects have been arrested across the country, but many claims have turned out to be hoaxes, pranks aimed at the dark side of an entertainment genre, usually associated with rubber chickens, gleeful children, and circuses. Researcher, author, and folklorist Benjamin Radford has written about the dark side in his book, Bad Clowns, published by the University of New Mexico Press. He joins us now by phone. Welcome, Benjamin Radford.
Thanks. Good to have you on.
Why do you think some people find clowns disturbing?
Well, there's a couple reasons. One of the more obvious ones is that clowns, of course, are typically masked. And if you look at it from an evolutionary psychology point of view, thousands of years ago, if a stranger came up to your tribe or your group wearing a mask, that was not a good thing. It was a sure sign that they had something nefarious going on. So part of it is the mask. And of course, when a figure is wearing a mask, it hides so much information about them. Not only do we not know their identity, and therefore they can't be accountable, right? If we don't know who they are, then if we can't even describe them, then we sort of sense that maybe they'll do anything to us and get away. And of course, the other facet is that in our everyday lives, when we talk to people, we get so much information from their expressions. Are they surprised with their tone of voice? And all that information is stripped away when you're confronted with somebody with a mask.
Now, all that makes sense, which leads to this next question is, why in the world did clowns ever evolve as figures of humor and glee and happiness?
That's a great question, actually. And when I was researching the book, that was one of the central questions. I was trying to figure out, where did this come from? This whole we had this genre of scary clowns that was probably best personified by Stephen King's Pennywise in his book It, later turned into the TV miniseries with Tim Curry, and of course many others. And what you find is that historically and culturally, the clown has always been a very ambiguous figure. So it's sort of a mistake to ask, when clowns went bad, because they were never really good. The early versions of the clown character as an archetype were always deeply ambiguous. Sometimes they were making fun of themselves and making you laugh. Sometimes they were making fun of you for their own amusement. And so the clown figure is, in mythology and folklore, essentially a trickster figure, as is the devil, by the way. Mm-hmm. So there's always been this really deep ambiguity about the clown character, and sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. And what happened was that the clown figure that most people today, certainly most Americans today, are familiar with, happened to be the happy clown, the bozo the clown, the one personified by Ronald McDonald. And that's only one very narrow thread in clown history. And so what happened is that sort of became the default clown that people thought of. And then when we have these scary clowns coming up in pop culture and in real life, that sort of turns it back on its head. But in fact, it's actually tracing its roots back to the earliest clowns.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about clowns and creepy clowns today, where they came from, where happy clowns came from, for that matter. My guest is Benjamin Radford. He's a researcher and the author of the book Bad Clowns. As Benjamin just mentioned, author Stephen King recently has written about or wrote the book It, the television adaptation of that was creepy indeed. He recently tweeted about clown sightings. He wrote, "Hey guys, time to cool the clown hysteria. Most of them are good. Cheer up the kitties, make people laugh." Let's listen to a clip from the TV miniseries of Stephen King's It that probably contributed a great deal to fear of clowns these days.
"Aren't you going to say hello?
Oh, come on, bucko. Don't you want a balloon?
I'm not supposed to take stuff from strangers. My dad said so."
"Very wise of your dad, Georgie. Very wise indeed. I, Georgie, am Pennywise the Dancing Clown."
Yeah. The kid, by the way, is talking to him in a sewer drain. "We should clarify that none of the clowns you write about in your book, whether fictional or not, are actually professional clown performers, right?"
"That's right. In my book, I was trying to make a distinction between pointing out that the bad clowns, I necessarily drew a broad brush for bad. So it includes evil clown characters. Now, there are a handful of people, the killer clowns, for example. There's John Wayne Gacy, famously. But for the most part, the clowns that I write about in the book are not professional clowns. They're not. And certainly that's what you've seen in the hysteria over the past 6 weeks. Not only here in the States, but abroad. The vast majority, in fact, essentially all of them in the recent scares, they're not clowns at all. They're people who put on a clown mask. And, of course, you can put on a mummy mask or a vampire mask, and that doesn't make you a mummy or a vampire. And just because you put on a clown mask doesn't make you a clown."
One of the most famous bad clowns in pop culture has been the Batman villain, the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely sort of that devilish trickster type, right?
Absolutely. It probably came into the fore primarily for global audiences in the 80s when portrayed by Jack Nicholson and then later on, of course, by Heath Ledger. But in the comic books, of course, the Joker character has been around for many decades before that.
And I think Heath Ledger beautifully gave pause as a tragic figure too in his in how he played the Joker. And I wanted to talk about that tragic figure of the clown as well. Red Skelton is a big memory for a lot of people. He played a tragic clown figure on his weekly variety show. What about that sad clown thing? Where did that come from?
Well, it's interesting when you trace it back. Again, the clown figure per se has been basically anything you want it to be. I mean, he can personify greed or avarice or deception or power or trickery or whatever else, and sometimes good, sometimes bad. And when you trace it back, one of the early versions of the sort of happy, sad, dual nature of the clown goes back to, of all people, Charles Dickens. Dickens, in his 1836 book, The Pickwick Papers, has a character in there that's an alcoholic clown. And Dickens is actually influenced by a huge clown of the day, Joseph Grimaldi, who was a tragic figure in his own right. He was a real life clown, very, very popular in England in that era. And Grimaldi was, when he died, he was he was a professional clown and he made people laugh, but he was also injured and infirm from doing pratfalls for years for audiences. And so this very Dickensian character, of course, made it into the Pickwick Papers, and you had this notion of this figure that would put on essentially a fake persona or fake smile and go out to cheering audiences, but then when the lights are down and the crowds go away, he goes back to this really sad, pathetic life. And so I think part of it can be traced back to Dickens.
And then in your work, you quoted silent film actor Lon Chaney Sr. as saying, "A clown is funny in the circus ring, but what would be the normal reaction to opening a door at midnight and finding the same clown there in the moonlight?" And of course, it's that contradiction, that the context is everything.
Exactly, and that was one of the more interesting parts about trying to parse out in what context are clowns scary, because of course we see clowns all the time and they're in circuses and backyard parties, and they're not scary, they're not evil. And of course, when you have pop culture versions in movies and TV, I mean, it's an evil character written that way. And what you find is that clowns tend to be, we love clowns in certain very specific proscribed context, right? If they're in a backyard party, the circus, that's great. That's one thing. On the other hand, if they're knocking on your door at midnight, that's another thing. There's a line that's been crossed. If they're walking around, you know, a public park at midnight by themselves, that's creepy. So, again, we love clowns within very certain socially prescribed contexts.
So what do you make of this latest creepy clown craze? It seems to have faded a bit, you know, Target has taken the scary clown masks off their shelves. Mm-hmm. Lots of school districts have banned clowns from their, you know, their seasonal parties. What do you make of it?
Well, there's a couple things going on right now. You know, most of it is copycats and hoaxers. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not talking about people dressed as clowns trying to do evil things and kidnap children and murder anybody. We're talking about usually teenagers, young adults, and as you mentioned earlier, there's been last time I saw about a dozen arrests, at least. And when you look at the people who are arrested, it's a couple teenagers driving around a parking lot at night in a clown mask trying to scare people. So you have there's an element of social contagion here where the news media and social media put on these clown stories, these scary clown stories, and of course there are short videos and photos that are spread like wildfire. They go viral because why wouldn't they? And this inspires copycats, and so that's part of what's going on here is that people see these things and they want to sort of participate in this ongoing cultural narrative, and that's. So, you know, my bigger concern is that the general public is going to overreact to this. And there's been cases where people actually fired weapons at real or imagined clowns. Thankfully, nobody has been seriously injured. But I'm much more concerned about the public overreacting to these clown rumors than I am about anybody dressing as a clown trying to abduct or kill anyone.
Well, I'm also trying to figure out what they charge them with them when they arrest them.
That's exactly one of the problems. What you've seen is that over the past month or so, police departments here in the States and around the world have had difficulty dealing with this situation, specifically because, as you note, it's not illegal to dress as a clown. It's just not. So the police have to get more creative, and so they'll charge them with, you know, loitering or mischief or menacing or things like that. But at the end of the day, you know, this is actually one of the reasons that there are so many copycats is that it's a high yield, low risk prank because if they're successful in their minds, they make national news and their particular clown is seen on CNN. And if they're unsuccessful, the worst that happens is they get, you know, a slap on the wrist, arrested by a cop who lets them go with a misdemeanor. And, you know, and there you go.
What's the talk in clown circles about this whole thing? Are they upset? I mean, have they been here, done that? This has happened before. What do they say?
Well, it's interesting. This has happened before. And that's one thing a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, they hear this weird clown story scary. And you know, as I talk about in my book, this is not the first time this has happened. This has actually happened several times in the past, never to this extent. But, it, you know, certainly it's been huge in the news over the past 6 weeks. And so, again, this has happened before, and frankly, this will happen again, maybe in 2 years, maybe 5 years. But at some point, there will be another rash of these scary clown reports, and this is going to sort of recur. And, you know, I think the clowns that I've talked to about it, some of them are genuinely concerned about this. In fact, I got an email from a clown last week who asked my advice on it because she knew I'd researched it and written about it. And we talked about it, and you know, I think the there's some concern. I think the clowns are going to lay low for a while because of the bad publicity. But you know, clowns are resilient, right? They fall over, they bounce right back up. So I think that by next year, this will have faded, and the fad will be gone.
And clowns will be back. And Benjamin Radford, thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
Thanks for having me on.
Benjamin Radford, researcher and author of Bad Clowns. More on clowns coming up on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is hard to imagine a circus without clowns, who are there mostly to amuse and distract the audience while other acts set up. For some, however, the clown act means it's time for more popcorn. For them, a clown incites feelings of dread, and that's a real thing. It's called coulrophobia. Knox College psychology professor Frank McAndrew recently wrote about coulrophobia for theconversation.com. He joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Clowns don't really creep me out, but certain depictions of clowns do. But I know people who are genuinely fearful of all clowns. What's the difference?
Between being completely fearful and just not caring, or?
Or being, you know, creeped out by certain kinds of clowns.
I see. Well, it's all about how predictable or in context the clown is. If you're at the circus and you expect to see clowns, they're not creepy. But if you see one standing in the woods behind your house at night, that is creepy because it's out of context. It's all in how predictable the person is. And one of the reasons clowns creep people out is because they break all the rules. They don't look like other people. They are mischievous. So you never know what's going to happen next, and that makes us uncomfortable.
You wrote about a 2008 study in England that reveals that very few children actually like clowns. What do we know about that?
Well, I think that's the only actual study where they've crunched the numbers to see what a sample of kids thought. But most of the kids in that study found clowns a little bit frightening. And if you're trying to set up a therapeutic environment where the kids are going to get better, that's probably not the way you want to go.
Oh, interesting. So the idea of putting big clown pictures on the walls in a waiting room at a pediatrician's office is kind of what they were thinking about there.
Yeah, I think you could probably do better than that.
You published your own study called On the Nature of Creepiness, and it wasn't specifically about clowns, but you said that it helped explain the fear of clowns. How so?
Well, again, it's about predictability. When somebody creeps you out, it's because you're interacting with them and you're not sure whether they pose a threat to you or not. So if their nonverbal behaviors are off a little bit, you know, they're laughing and smiling at the wrong times and their eye contact isn't quite right and they're talking about inappropriate topics, that's kind of puts you on your guard. But at the same time, you can't just scream and run away from an awkward person because that would be rude. So you're left kind of not feeling comfortable because you don't know what to make of the person. Clowns, by definition, are designed to freak us out because we're not supposed to know what they're going to do next. You don't know if they're going to play some humiliating prank on you. With the makeup, you can't even tell who they are or what they're really feeling. So they press all the buttons in our brain that kind of put us on our guard.
You said clowns are designed. What did you learn about the origins of clowns to help you in your work?
Well, at the very beginning, clowns have been around for thousands of years. And originally, they were sort of like court jesters. They had some freedom to make fun of people in power. They were also figures that you could heap abuse on without any fear of retaliation. But somewhere around the 1500s or 1600s, they started to change into something a little more sinister and mischievous. You started to have puppet shows with Punch and Judy, where you had these clowns that would, clown puppets that would sneak up on other puppets and hit them with sticks and run away. And Shakespeare started writing about some characters that were a little mischievous, that were clowns. So somewhere around that time, it really turned. But I really think in our modern times, it was the John Wayne Gacy thing, mm-hmm. more than anything, that triggered the fear of clowns.
Now, John Wayne Gacy played a clown. He played a legitimate clown. He was a real clown.
Yep, Pogo the Clown.
Pogo the Clown. But on the side, he was a serial killer.
On the side, yeah, that was his hobby.
Yeah.
And I think right after that broke, Hollywood kind of jumped on the bandwagon, and we've probably had a dozen killer clown movies since then. So this link between clowns and serial killers, both in real life and in the movies, is very strong. And I think if you were to give somebody a word association test, okay, the word clown, what else do you think of? It's not going to be very long before serial killer pops up. And so, as if clowns were not at a disadvantage already, this link with serial killers really put them over the top.
And John Wayne Gacy also was a painter of sorts. And he painted clowns, and they were the epitome of creepy.
Yes, they were. If you look at his artwork, the facial expressions of the clowns, everything about them is creepy. Now, I don't know how much of that comes from the fact that we know they were painted by John Wayne Gacy.
Right.
So,
well, some of them look...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
It doesn't matter. So that kind of adds to that whole, I hate to use the word mythology because it's not mythology. He was a horrible, you know, he was a serial killer. It was real.
Right. Yes.
But the visual mythology of that leering smile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we would be on our guard against a leering smile anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But to know that this leering smile is coming from this guy who was a serial killer, in fact, yeah, it's an emotional thing that's hard to overcome.
Do you have a sense that, have you talked with real clowns and how about how they try to counteract these imageries?
Well, one of the things that I had not expected at all, first of all, was the media response to the article that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly didn't expect to start corresponding with clowns. And I have been getting all kinds of messages from angry clowns and sad clowns. And the angry clowns are really objecting to the fact that I did not make a distinction between professional clowns and these posers out there in the world that are terrifying people.
Mm-hmm.
But from the viewer's perspective, if you see somebody standing there in a clown suit, they're a clown, right? And whether they're a professional clown or not is not something that you worry about. The sad clowns are kind of, I'm very disappointed and depressed that this thing that they love to do has become this undesirable activity and that people don't like them just because of what they do. And they want to know what they can do about that. And I don't really have any advice other than to say, stop being a clown. You know, I don't know how to overcome that.
I guess the main identifying factor of a clown is the mask, sort of, whether it's the makeup or an actual mask, right?
I think so, yeah. And well, and also the exaggerated physical things, the big nose, the wig, the big shoes. Everything is sort of larger than life.
And awkward.
And awkward, yes.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about clowns, why some of us are afraid of clowns, what clowns have to do with that, and the history of clowns. Right now I'm talking with Frank McAndrew. He's a professor of psychology at Knox College in Illinois, and he's written about clowns. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. What do you think about clowns? Maybe if there's some clowns out there listening, you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, we know that some people have genuine phobias of clowns. There's actually a word for that. If you're one of those people, give us a call and tell us why you think that is, or if you have a question for Frank McAndrew, psychology professor at Knox College, give us a call, 614-292-8513. I was surprised when you described in the Conversation.com article that yours was the first empirical study of creepiness. I thought it would, I don't know, I guess I was just surprised that it wasn't a bigger issue.
I was too. I started noticing how often people use the term in everyday language that this guy creeped them out or something was creepy. And so just out of curiosity, I started asking people, well, what do you mean by when you use the word creepy, what do you mean? And I started hearing similar things from people. And being a good psychologist, I thought, well, let me go to literature and see what people have had to say about this. And I was absolutely blown away. There had not been a single study, not even one, where anybody had studied this before. I was just amazed. So my study was just kind of a first attempt to gather some information, and it's fun to be the first one to do something.
What did you learn?
Well, I had some ideas about what kinds of things might creep us out, and so we confirmed that it is very much about people who are outside of the rules in some way. They're behaving in non-normative ways, unexpected ways. And physical characteristics in and of themselves don't seem to make somebody creepy, but they can magnify creepy tendencies. So if a person has some very unusual physical features and they're also behaving in a somewhat creepy way, those physical features can make them come across as even more creepy. But nonverbal behaviors were a big one. We asked people to just name hobbies that they thought were creepy.
Yeah.
And most of the things that were named fell into one of two categories. Collecting things, especially things that other people would like to avoid, like insects or reptiles or body parts. It's amazing that I guess people collect things like teeth and bones.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
I was on a radio program in Ireland where some woman called in who claims to have kept every toenail clipping that she'd ever had in a box.
Yeah.
And wanted to know if this was creepy. And I had to say that I thought that crossed the line.
Yeah.
So collecting things was a big one. Also, hobbies that involved observing or watching. So photographers and bird watchers and people who are sort of looking at things seem to be creepy to people. I have a friend who's an ornithologist, biology professor, and he walks his dog and he takes his binoculars with him because he never knows what kind of birds he might see.
Mm-hmm.
The police have confronted him at least a half a dozen times because people have called them about this guy walking around the neighborhood with binoculars. And so we're kind of on the lookout for people who are doing things like that.
Huh, that's interesting. Another question for my bird experts the next time they come on. Let's take a quick call. Julie in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I have a comment and I guess sort of a question. My daughter, I have three kids, and my daughter, when she was about 2 years old, we were watching a children's show. I think it was Yo Gabba Gabba. And it was a Halloween episode, and one of the characters was dressed like a clown. And she just became terrified, like just couldn't watch it. I'd never seen her act like this before. It was just this visceral, hot fear reaction of this show that she's watched, you know, many, many times. And, you know, she's 6 years old now, and she still has a fear of clowns. And she was never exposed to them before, so... You know, the reaction, it was just immediate, and she didn't even understand why. And I guess I'm wondering if there's some sort of deeper psychology into, you know, you could just have this inexplicable fear of just of what the clown looks like. I don't know. I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But so I guess that's my question.
Frank McAndrew?
Well, you know, it would be hard to say exactly what's going on with your daughter. But for a kid that young to suddenly be confronted with this human being who isn't a regular human being. In other words, their little brains buttons are getting pushed that, okay, this is a person and I should respond to this person like I do to other people. But then there are all of these very unusual and sort of scary other things going on. And that kind of paralyzes you. You know, you don't know how to process the information. Is this a scary thing or is this a friendly thing? And that kind of conflict, I think, in a kid could be pretty upsetting.
And ongoing, I mean, once it's triggered, boom.
Yes, once that association of this negative reaction, I got scared by this thing, that's going to pop into your head every time you see them. It's, you know, you can't help it. So, yeah.
Do people have fear of clowns, phobic fear of clowns? Do they have it for life? Is there a cure? I mean, do people go to, is it something people go to therapy for?
Well, I would think not, because... there are lots of things in life that if you have a phobia about them, it really disrupts your day-to-day life, right? So if you have a fear of heights or fear of water, or there are all kinds of things that will sort of limit what you can do. If you're just afraid of clowns, I think unless you have a very weird neighborhood, most of us can go about our day-to-day lives and avoid the thing that frightens us. You don't go to the circus. You don't go to McDonald's. and so... I think most people wouldn't have to seek treatment just for that. Now, if they have a whole lot of phobias and that's just one of them, that's a different story.
Julie, thanks a lot for your call. I appreciate it. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you have a question or comment about clowns and the whole creepy clown thing. There's this ambiguity in creepiness. You're not sure. And it really makes me think of conversations I have with people. Usually they're strangers. You know, you're right. I mean, there's someone you don't know. And so they're coming across a certain way and you find them creepy and you're not in a position to really respond by just walking away. You feel sort of trapped.
Yes. And that's exactly what being creeped out is. It's not the same thing as fear. If you're confronted with a threatening person who is pointing a gun at you, that's terrifying. But I don't think you'd use the word creepy to describe it, because mm-hmm. it's very clear that there's a threat there. You're absolutely right. The creeped out thing is when you're in a situation where there might be something to worry about here, but you're not sure. And places can creep us out just like people can, right? You're in a place that gives you the creeps because you're not sure if it's dangerous or not. And so, yeah, it is very much about the uncertainty.
Is there anything about the modern mind, the modern sensibility, that is much different than it was back in the 1500s or 1600s?
No, as a matter of fact, I'm an evolutionary psychologist, so I firmly believe we're walking around with caveman brains. Mm-hmm. We had to be successful throughout most of human evolution, and the amount of time that we've been living in the modern world has just not been long enough for our brains to catch up. And so we get creeped out by the very things that our ancestors 100,000 years ago would have been creeped out by. So we've got different things, modern media and so forth, that can push the buttons. But I think the buttons that are there are exactly the same as they were in the 1500s.
Right. So there was a reason. It goes back. We may not know what it was, but there was something back in the day.
Well, sure.
4,000 years ago, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And think about it this way. We are descendants of cowards. We have been primed to err on the side of caution. So if you're walking through the forest and the bushes are rustling off to the right, well, maybe it's just the wind, maybe it's just a rabbit, but maybe it's something dangerous. And the people who survived were the ones who assumed that it was something dangerous and responded accordingly rather than saying, it's probably just the wind. Mm-hmm. Those genes were removed pretty quickly.
Dory in Newark, you're on the air with Frank McAndrew. Hi, Dory.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
My response is that I have known three adult people who, of course, do not like clowns, as the subject is about, but they also are afraid of nutcrackers. And I was wondering if maybe it might be the painting of the face or what could possibly be that reason.
Huh.
Boy, that's interesting. I've never heard of nutcracker phobia. Well, I mean, if they really are truly afraid of clowns, anything that reminds them of a clown is going to push the clown button. So I think you're right. I mean, nutcrackers have that same sort of animated face and the bright colors. That makes some sense to me. But, you know, three different people.
Mm. Yeah, that's something. You know, that Herr Drosselmeyer, though, in the Nutcracker Suite always scared me more than the Nutcracker did. I never got why that little girl ever wanted to talk to that guy.
Yeah, now that you mention it, that doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
No. Frank McAndrew and Dory, thanks a lot. That's really interesting. Thanks for that call. Frank McAndrew, I want to thank you for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
It's Frank McAndrew. He's a professor of psychology at Knox College. He has written about a real thing called coulrophobia. It is a fear of clowns. So we'll continue our conversation with maybe a comic view of the fear of clowns or the creepy clown syndrome. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. There are funny clowns, there are sad clowns, and there are creepy or scary clowns. How about a funny take on scary clowns? Humor writer Chuck Sambuccino takes the clown threat seriously in his satiric book, When Clowns Attack, A Survival Guide. He joins us now by phone. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Do you get much hate mail from clowns?
No, not really. I was kind of surprised that it didn't happen more when the book came out a year ago. But the truth is, I think that from the very beginning page and, you know, even the cover, you realize that it is in jest. And I think that they realize that responding to me would just kind of fan the flames, and it's a good idea to leave it alone.
How did you first decide to take on the subject of clowns?
Oh, I've hated clowns for years. Doesn't everybody hate clowns?
Oh, you hate clowns. You don't like clowns. Okay.
Oh, yes. Both of my grandfathers, both sides of the family, were assaulted by clowns. And I heard these stories growing up. And so I decided to put together a small group called the Red Nose Alert, which alerts people to clown attacks and what's going on, kind of like tracking these things across the country. And I decided to construct a survival guide that could teach people how to ward off the danger and spot the danger and so forth.
When you wrote the book, were you aware of the history of real people dressing as clowns and harassing people?
Yes, that was actually all over the news for years. It just so happens that it's kind of reached a fever pitch this year. But in the past years, you can look this up on the internet. In the past years, every Halloween, people seem to dress up as clowns and do this sort of thing. But this year, it's some sort of massive coordinated effort, which has been quite terrifying.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much it has to do with something like social media or something like that. What do you think?
I think social media is great for organizing these bozos, but also it's great for people like us, because if anything's going wrong, like if a clown pops up in a street corner in Albany, within minutes, social media is sharing this, and the people of Albany can all band together to get rid of this joker and alert the police and, you know, start carrying a gun when they go out of their house.
Start carrying a gun. Well, that's what one of my earlier guests said. That's part of the problem is that people maybe shouldn't be taking it into the law into their own hands. It's not illegal to dress like a clown.
Well, it's not illegal to dress like a clown. Let me. All of a sudden we're going to blend joke with reality here. But here in Cincinnati, yeah. Where I live, like we've had school cancellations because of the clown. Real school cancellations, and we've had real threats, and we've actually gotten police alerts and so forth and so on. So if you're walking outside dressed like a clown when this law enforcement and the schools have said this is not funny, then you're kind of taking your own safety into your own hands. And if someone were to, give you a roundhouse kick, I would not feel the slightest bit bad. But then again, I'm very anti-clown violence.
In other words, if you walk around with a Jason mask on, you run the risk.
Yes, if you run around with a playground with a sign that says "Free candy in my van," don't be surprised if you're getting punched in the face.
And you support the movement by Target to remove all scary clown masks from the shelves.
Oh, and I support any getting rid of scary clown whatever from any store. At this point, I think that the word is out. These people are not symbols of, jollity and happiness. And the days of, happy birthday parties with balloon animals, those are long gone. Clowns, for the most part, these are transients, these are drunks, and people need to understand what's going on here with the clown movement. Now, you might call me a conspiracy theorist. I don't even know if I'm left wing or right wing with this. I'm clown wing. I'm polka dot wing. And I know it's out there, but I feel like the guy who predicted the housing crisis before the bubble burst in 2008, because I wrote this book a year ago. I've been saying this for years, and all of a sudden on social media, people are saying, hey, this guy, Chuck Sambaccino, got it right. He wrote the book, When Clowns Attack Your Survival Guide, and now you need it. And I just feel like I'm was before my time.
In one of your chapters, you have a section on spotting the plain clothes clown.
Yes, because not all clowns are walking around, in stripes and size 24 shoes with face paint. People don't dress up all the time. So how do you spot someone who's a clown who's dressed normally? And there's some things that you can look for at home. Parents especially worried about their children. First of all, look for rashes around the neck and the face, because they slather all that grease paint on their face, and it's bound to cause rashes if they're wearing it too much. Maybe you're at work and you're sitting in your desk or your cubicle. Someone is always coming by with some bad knock-knock jokes. That is a clear sign that you're dealing with a plainclothes clown. Lots of bad jokes, always performing. Suddenly they start talking about the unicycle they just bought, something like that. Also, something else is a hatred of animal rights activists. If you're not sure if someone is a plainclothes clown, start talking about how you want to, protect the elephants or join PETA, anything like that, because the circus folk absolutely hate animal rights activists. They've been fighting them for years. And if you mention this and their face goes blood red or they take a swing at you or something, you can definitely assume you're dealing with a joker.
Now, you have analyzed different types of clowns. The party clown, is that kind of, aren't they harmless?
They're basically harmless. Maybe you have a birthday party, you want to invite a clown over. But these people are typically petty thieves. They'll distract you. They'll throw some trinkets and some balloon animals one way, maybe smash a pie into some kid's face. And when you're cleaning up your toddler's face with this pie, they're inside looking through the jewelry drawer, okay, looking through the underwear drawer. They're creepy. So they're generally harmless. You're not going to get into a fight or anything like that, but you better watch your valuables.
Have you ever seen the movie It?
Oh, of course. Yeah, it is the foundation of everything. I saw that movie when I was about 10, came out in 1990.
Oh, my gosh.
And I just remember, it came across at a time where I was really starting to watch my first scary movies at age 10, and I think that thing haunted me for years. And I believe that in the acknowledgement section of this book that I wrote, I actually do thank Stephen King, because I said, you know, without you, I'm not sure this book would be here.
Don't you think it took a lot of audacity for Stephen King to be out there tweeting to everybody, calm down, you know, there's nothing to worry about. Come on, most clowns are nice.
I really don't know what he's thinking right there, because right now I think clowns are a serious danger. The word is out. It's one of these things that people have been ignoring for years, like climate change, and just it reached a breaking point this year. And I think that I don't know what Stephen King's doing. Maybe he's got a friend who's a clown or something, and it's unclear.
I'm wondering if there are going to be fewer clown movies on TV because of this outbreak.
I think now's the time to put the clown movies on TV because of this clown fever pitch that we're recently. It's kind of like striking the iron while it's hot. I don't know, and another thing, and this is way off topic, but Stephen King's book It, you know, was filmed as a movie. It came out on TV in 1990. Well, they just filmed the new version, and I believe that comes out next year, calendar year 2017. So
really?
The clown phenomenon. Oh yeah, the publicity photos have already shown up online. This is long since, you know, happened, and so there's no sign that this is going away. I don't see why this clown phenomena of people attacking and showing up and, you know, just jostling you at night, coming around a corner, I don't see why this won't grow.
All right, so, like, what about a circus clown? They're in it for the money, right? I mean, they're just hard-working clowns at that point, aren't they?
Circus clowns are usually the ones that'll come up to you after it's all done, and they'll get a little bit too close to your toddler, get a little bit too close to your face, and then when you feel threatened and you push them, then all of a sudden you're surrounded by 14 clowns you didn't even know were there. And they're saying that you are going to go down unless you pony up. What's in your wallet, pal? So it's all a hustle. It's a con. It's a hustle. And they'll just take the money in your wallet, or else, you know, you might get a broken nose.
Okay, by the way, everybody, we're just joking around. Chuck Sambuccino is the author of When Clowns Attack, A Survival Guide. It is a satirical look at clowns. If you have a question or comment, if you have a clown joke, now's the time. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment there. You know, when it comes to the tramp or the hobo clown, that's where I kind of soften up a little bit, Chuck. I think of, you know, Red Skelton and, you know, his sad little clown. And, you know, I always kind of like them. You don't?
Well, that's on you. That is on you. Take your chances. I will stand back from a distance with, you know, a weapon at the ready.
Now, the insane pound clock posse wants, you know, they're inciting.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The Insane Clown Posse, if anyone doesn't know, this is kind of like a hardcore rap group. Lyrics don't make any sense, and they tend to attract just crazy fans that are a little bit, I think the nicest way to say this is off, just people who are a little bit off, and they're just kind of perpetuating the clown stereotype of face paint equals danger.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And they're pretty popular.
Yeah, they are supposed, but it's real in real life. I mean, the Insane Clown Posse is very subculture. Like, it attracts a certain kind of aimless person who's looking for an identity, and that's what you fear with the clown. With the clown attacks these days, is clowns will go from town to town looking for people who are a little bit down on the luck, looking for a few children that, you know, are looking for a father figure, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden they're lost on the carnival circuit forever.
Well, getting back to the tramp or the hobo, no sympathy for them?
Probably, you're talking to the wrong guy. Like,
okay.
I said, I'm the conspiracy theorist. I'm the person who's in the panic room whenever I see a clown walking down the street.
I guess your parents, or at least your grandparents, love your book.
Yeah, well, they do, and people seem to have kind of reached out about it. The fear of clowns is massively widespread. Like, my other book was called How to Survive a Garden Gnome. People giggle at that one, but you know, no one really writes you and says, "Hey, you're onto something here." But the fear of clowns is massively widespread. You look at real studies that happened over in Britain, and it was up there beyond fear of dying. It was up there beyond fear of public speaking. Nobody likes clowns. So the question becomes, why? And it's because I just when I got on the call, I heard somebody ask about face paint, nutcrackers. And the truth is, when you put face paint on, your identity is concealed. And nobody in the right mind wants to be conversing with someone, let alone when they've got their kids with them, with somebody they can't identify. They don't know who they're talking to. They say they can't identify them because their face is hidden under makeup. And also, when you say, "What's your name?" they say, "Oh, my name's Skittles." And you don't know who they are, and you don't know where they live. I mean, try calling a traveling circus and saying, "Could you please provide the legal information for Skittles?" They're going to be like, "Listen, buddy, you know, we're a carnival and you can get lost, and we don't even know who Skittles is." And they might not know. He might have just shown up. So when you paint the face and you conceal your identity, both your looks and your actual name, and then nobody wants to talk to someone that they can't potentially identify later. That's just fact.
I could wear a funny hat, but no one would necessarily think much of it. I could wear big shoes. I could wear a weird bow tie. It really comes down to the face paint, right?
It does, and it also comes down to the fact that in our society, clowns are allowed to do whatever they want. If you're walking down the street and someone wants to spray seltzer water in your eyes or slam, you know, a lemon meringue pie in your face, you're not allowed to fight back. You're not allowed to be angry, quote unquote, because these are clowns and they can get away with whatever they want. Well, I'm here to say that we need to take a stand and say no more, no more clowns.
So the next time you come across a dunking booth clown, then have at it.
Oh, dunking booth clowns are like wild animals. They're caged up for a reason. It's basically like the Hannibal Lecter of clowns. Okay, I wouldn't mess with those guys. First of all, I don't go anywhere near carnivals or circuses because I'm afraid of clowns, and because I'm afraid, you know, I've got a target on my back because of this book. But I wouldn't go near a dunking booth clown if you paid me. If you paid me, I would not go near those wild animals.
And the Cirque du Soleil clown. I mean, I have to admit, that big crying baby clown always gets to me.
Well, the Cirque du Soleil clown is not really a clown at all. And they're just, they're not dangerous. Like, they're not pickpockets. They're not thieves. They're not going to steal your kids. They're just unbearably pretentious. Oh. That's why I don't like the Cirque du Soleil clown. They're so unbearably pretentious. And if you want to make them angry, just start, you know, joking about France or crepes or a designer. And they're going to go ballistic, and it'll drive them mad for weeks. That's how you fight back.
Okay, let's hear from Jeff in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. This is a funny show. This is great.
Thanks.
I just wanted to mention, if you want to see how the inside scoop on what clowns are really like, there was a movie, I think it was Bobcat Goldthwait, was a maladjusted alcoholic clown who always got in fights with mimes. He hated mimes. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, well, I think the movie's called Shakes the Clown. Shakes the Clown. And what the caller is saying is there is a long-seated feud between clowns and mimes. I mean, this goes back. This is like the Hatfields and the McCoys. These people hate each other. So if you're ever afraid of clowns, try to buy a house in a mime-friendly neighborhood, because everyone's going to be united in the anti-clown movement.
And do clowns necessarily wander around typically in mime neighborhoods?
It would not be in their best interest, so I'd say that it's pretty safe.
Okay. Jeff, thanks about that heads up on the movie about alcoholic clown who fights mimes. That's good to know. And then just going forward, you said you got a target on your back, and I have to imagine you do.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And the more the clown fever happens in real life, the more people reference my book online, and the more people reference my book online, the more real clowns become aware of it. And it's one of these things, like I said, like I have not received any direct threats, because I feel like they realize that would only be publicity for my anti-clown movement. But I am wary when I'm walking around carnivals at night, or circuses, or abandoned funhouses. You got to be wary about these things.
It's a vicious cycle. Chuck Sambuccino, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Chuck Sambuccino, author of When Clowns Attack, A Survival Guide. You've been listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Thanks for listening. Now here's a little bit from the song Tears of a Clown, performed by Smokey Robinson and the Miracles.